This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, the UK-US airline terrorist charade, turning the screws on democratic rights. Thursday, August 10th, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff called a press conference in the United States. Quote, "The terrorist suspects arrested in the UK overnight had a well-advanced plan to detonate electronic devices or liquid explosives disguised as beverages or on onboard US-bound aircraft, a sophisticated plot suggestive of Al-Qaeda." Later, counterterrorism officials told the press that the attacks were aimed at U.S.-bound planes of United Airlines, American Airlines, Continental Airlines at London's Heathrow Airport. Immediately, the airlines closed down the airports, canceled flights, and made everyone empty their carry-on baggage. The Bank of England, the very day, froze the assets of 19 people on early Friday after they received instructions on Thursday. Quote, "On the advice of the police and security services, the Treasury has instructed the Bank of England to issue notices to effect a freeze of the assets of a number of individuals arrested in yesterday's operations." The bank surprisingly released the names, the addresses, and the age: Abdullah Ahmed Ali, Kosar Ali, Shahzad Karam Ali, Nabil Hussein, Tanvir Hussein, Umar Hussein, Umar Islam, Wasim Kayani, Asim Abdullah Khan, Wahid Arafat Khan, Osman Adam Khatib, Abdul Munin Patel, Tayyib Rauf, Muhammad Usman Sadiq, Asad Sarwar, Ibrahim Savant, Amin Azmin Tariq, Shamin Mohammed Udin, and Wahid Zaman. The oldest person on the list, Shamin Mohammed Udin, was 35. The youngest, Abdul Munin Patel, is only 17. And then in Pakistan, two British subjects were also arrested, Rauf and another man. And press was told that these were key leaders of this terror plot. Terror plot, today on Taking Aim, we discuss this yet another charade.
look at Miami. A number of young men with no connections to any politics whatsoever, a spiritual group doing martial arts, rounded up, and on the basis of an FBI operative who was entirely responsible for every declared relationship with these people to targeting any objects or objectives in Miami, the arrests are made. Toronto, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police provide the entire sting operation, explosives, coordinates. The young men who are involved have had no relation to these events other than the presence of Royal Canadian Mounted Police provocateurs. London, on the 7th of July, the London bombings, an operation that goes forth under the rubric of the Visor Security, staging an operation within the underground itself in London. On the same day, in the same place, at the exact same time that the putative bombs are being planted, they are conducting an exercise at those very locations. In Lodi, California, the same modality. Young men who have no relation to politics, who are not involved in anything other than the fact that they are from Pakistan or they are Muslim, are targeted for infiltration, provocateur operations established by the authorities. All of those who are associated with the young men, whether in Miami or Toronto or London in July 7th of last year or in Lodi, the same modality with respect to 1993, the bombing of the World Trade Center, when an FBI operative is sent into the Mosque of the Blind Egyptian Cleric and young men are asked to come to meetings who have no relation to these events. The FBI provides the explosives, arranges the safe house, facilitates the coordinates for an event that the young men don't even know is the object of their meetings. The same old, same old.
Ralph Craig Murray, former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, who had exposed the fact that there hadn't been Islamic terrorists in Uzbekistan and that, in fact, many innocent Muslim people of Uzbeks were being systematically tortured into signing false confessions. This former British ambassador had this to say about the recent London airline terrorist charade. He said, quote, "This is more propaganda than plot. Of the over 1,000 British Muslims arrested under anti-terrorist legislation, only 12% are ever charged with anything. That is simply harassment of Muslims on an appalling scale. Of those charged, 80% are acquitted. Most of the very few, just over 2% of arrests who are convicted, are not convicted of anything to do with terrorism, but of some minor offense the police happened upon while trawling through the wreck of the lives they had shattered." And that is Craig Murray, a former British ambassador to Uzbekistan. Now, Uzbekistan is very important in the light of the recent arrests, the 24 arrests, and one person was released immediately, that took place in Great Britain. An article in Scotland on Sunday reveals the importance of, one, torture, and two, of Uzbek militants. The article was published Sunday, August 13th, Scotland on Sunday, and is entitled, "A Nation is Grounded by the Enemy Within." For the small unit of heavily armed commandos from the Pakistani Special Services Group, the SSG, the arrest of a suspected Uzbekistani militant last month on the outskirts of the remote desert town of Wana on the Afghan border prompted little excitement. Like hundreds of other foreign nationals in the Waziristan region without a passport or paperwork, he was handed over to the ISI, Pakistan's feared Directorate for Inter-Service Intelligence. He was handed over for interrogation, and we should note here that the ISI was created and funded and trained by the CIA, as well as British intelligence, and it's the ISI that has funded the Mujahideen organizations in supported by British intelligence and the CIA that was undermining the Afghan government and supporting the Mujahideen that later brought in the Taliban. But once in custody of his interrogators and likely to have been given, according to Scotland on Sunday, methamphetamine or sodium pentothal to elevate his mood prior to questioning, a notorious ISI technique, the Uzbek captive began to unleash a torrent of information to his captors. If we read this properly, we see that what they're saying is that the captors promoted certain ideas, and to avoid the torture, the Uzbek captive sang the song that he knew his captors wanted to hear. The article goes on. As the interrogation continued, the Uzbek had a big story to tell. He told his captors he had recently come across information about two foreigners with their own plot in the making. The information led directly to the arrest of two British Muslims in Lahore and Karachi on August 2nd and helped uncover a complex financial network between a terror cell in the UK and the Pakistan-based militant group Lashkar-e-Taiba, a key ally of Al-Qaeda. Pakistan became the center of attention in the aftermath of a whirlwind of furious activity on the other side of the world. Islamabad claimed one of its captured Britons, Rashid Rauf, produced the critical details of the alleged Al-Qaeda plot to bomb U.S.-bound jets that allowed Britain to foil the conspiracy. And before we go on, we should note here that the Scotland on Sunday claims that Rauf was part of Lashkar-e-Taiba, but The Observer says that he, according to Pakistan and British intelligence, that Rauf was part of Lashkar-e-Jhangjivi. And the New York Times states that Rauf, according to Pakistani and British intelligence, was a member of Jaish-e-Mohammed. Now, these are three independent groups. He wasn't a member of one or another or yet another. But what is common to all these Pakistani groups is that they are funded by the ISI, they are trained by the ISI, and they are run by the ISI. So we have the major press all getting information from Pakistani and British intelligence, each one claiming that Rauf is in another independent group in Pakistan, and that each of these groups is tied to Al-Qaeda. And when you get to the root of all this, they are funded, they are run by the ISI, and there is no proof, no evidence that Rauf is a member of any of these groups.
The same pattern emerges in relation to the bombings of London in 2005, July 7th. The BBC disclosed that notwithstanding the fact that the young men who were accused of this had no relation to any of the events, the person who they maintained was the ringleader, Mohammed Sadiq Khan, the BBC reported, was in fact an operative of British intelligence, MI5, and an informant of the entire operation, i.e., a progenitor of it on behalf of British intelligence. In fact, the BBC discloses that a 12-year veteran of the London Metropolitan Police, Charles Shoebridge, of the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst, had evidence from the beginning that Khan was in fact working for British intelligence from the get-go. Indeed, the entire London operation of that time bears similarity to what is unfolding now. It's the same M.O. And we should bear in mind, as we reported at the time of our series of broadcasts on the London bombings, the underground bombings, that that British intelligence agencies didn't end with Khan. The Fox News terror expert John Loftus disclosed that the other proposed mastermind of the London bombing, Harun Rashid Aswat, was, quote, MI6 intelligence. Working for the entire time for the British security services, and we have the same modality unfolding here. We mentioned the various organizations to which these people are supposed to be affiliated, or at least Rauf. And, of course, what they have in common is, one, nothing to do with events in London, but everything to do with the Central Intelligence Agency and, indeed, with the MI6. And what's important about the current events is that, notwithstanding the reports that come out of London, what we have learned from Associated Press is that virtually all the information concerning this plot emanated from the Central Intelligence Agency, AP, August 14th, CIA, is the progenitor of the data and the information pertaining to the presumptive plots into with respect to the airlines in Great Britain.
Ralph, I went to the internet and did some research about the three groups. Because remember, if you just read the New York Times, or you're reading The Observer, or you're reading The Guardian, or you're reading Scotland on Sunday, you get a picture of what has happened. But what happens is, if you read all these press, the media outlets, as we do in preparing Taking Aim, you find gross inconsistencies. But what is common about all these groups, Lakshi, Toiba, and the other Lakskar, the Jayashi Mohammed, and the third group, is that each of these groups are involved in the Kashmiri independence movement, the separation of Kashmir from India. And all these groups, each of these three groups, their operations, what are called terrorist operations, all take place within Kashmir and in India. There has never been any reporting of any action by any one of these groups outside of this. And this is reported on the Navy, the U.S. Navy military website, and it comes from the Country Reports on Terrorism 2004 from the U.S. Department of State. And not only that, the South Asia Terrorism Portal, which is the Institute for Conflict Management, has an extensive report of the Army of the Poor, which is Lashkar-e-Toiba. And again, all of their actions take place in Jammu or Kashmir. But what also is important is they were involved in the ISI-CIA support of the Mujahideen resistance against the Soviet forces in Afghanistan and against the Afghan government itself.
Maya, let's address a particular aspect of the government-orchestrated terror plots, the government-instigated terror plots, because they have a common feature. As we've noted over and again, they run simulated tests involving the very operation that they're proposing to expose, and it turns out to be an operation that they run themselves. Here is an article in the United Press International on the 14th of August, that is yesterday, that pertains to the presumptive targeting of a terror operation, and it's instructive. Last month, Air Force ICE 2006 conducted an exercise showing that the United States Air Force and defense contractors were collaborating on complex network-centric operations to target terrorists and their camps preparing operations. Raytheon reported that 11 government and industry sites were used to run operations in Southwest Asia using real-time virtual constructive modeling, allowing multiple organizations to monitor a raid on a terrorist camp literally from their armchairs. Terrorist plotters were to be targeted. The AFICE, Air Force Integrated Collaborative Environment 2006 exercise called Icebreaker 06 was run July 17th to July 21st. A full raft of U.S. capabilities, drones, AWACS, planes, satellites, ground forces, fighter jets. The Tucson-based Raytheon said it was the only industry team hooked up directly to the, quote, exercise, unquote, and the other industry representatives were included through the Elgin Airface Base node. This really shows the art of the possible in going after dynamic targeting needs, boasted Raytheon senior manager Mark Hall, Icebreaker, providing our customers with a view how Raytheon integrates solutions in the future with respect to current and near-term assets. What's involved here is targeting terrorists in their camps, preparing operations which have bearing on both Britain and the United States to take them out. But this is an exercise that involves knowledge based upon their own informants, knowledge based upon their own operatives.
Ralph, to go back to Pakistan and this particular operation, because it really involves Pakistan, the U.S., and the U.K., and it shows how their minds work and how their operations work, just as the example you gave of the simulations. When our officers interrogated Ralph, a Pakistani official said, he broke down very quickly. And that is, he broke down quickly under their torture. He told them what we believe was not even in the knowledge of the U.S. and the British, that they were actually planning to blow up airliners. When they had finished interrogating him, they coordinated this information with the British authorities, and they carried out arrests in Britain. Now, over the three continents, there was an investigation. The British intelligence said that they had been tracking the bomb plot for more than a year, and actually prior to the Rauf, as I mentioned before, the Rauf arrest, as I mentioned before, they had had a telephone call and that somebody had said they were a concerned citizen and they had suspicions over the behavior of a man who they described as, quote, a former friend. Scotland on Sunday continues. Initial follow-up inquiries into the suspect rapidly developed into a full-scale investigation, and the scrutiny of a single man. Now, remember, this is a single man targeted by a bitter friend, a person who used to be a friend and then became a bitter enemy, into a wide-ranging surveillance operation taking in dozens of associates linked by personal relations and internet contacts. The plot became the biggest anti-terrorist surveillance operation in British history, with more than 1,500 people working on it. MI5 operatives tracked a growing list of suspects by physical pursuit and covert surveillance of phone calls, emails. And as one intelligence source confirmed last night, by the actual infiltration of the, quote, conspirators by one of the organization's own agents from December last year. That is a mole placed among pretending to be a friend of the alleged bomb plotters. Investigators eventually fitted 12 vehicles with GPS tracking devices, monitored calls from mobiles and pay telephones, and tapped into emails sent to Pakistan, Europe, and Iran. They followed their targets, recorded their meetings and conversations, scrutinized their bank accounts, took note of what they read on the internet, where they shopped, and how they spent their money. Please take note of what they were doing with these people, because this is what is being done here in the United States with the records of you, me, and all our listeners, if the government chooses to do so. The agency also followed some of the senior figures to Pakistan, where they believed they were attempting to source cash and volunteers and, quote, pick up orders from their handlers. Ralph?
Maya, this has the common feature. Young men who are unrelated to these events are spied upon. But government informants and government operatives are laying plans for an operation that is fully disclosed, in fact, initiated in many, most of these instances by the authorities themselves. And every report in the bourgeois press, when you look at it carefully, acknowledges these basic facts. Here is the New York Times on August 6, 13th, tracing the plots, British Watch, and then Pounce. The disclosure that British officials conducted months up to a year of surveillance before arresting 24 terrorism suspects highlights what terrorism specialists say is an essential difference between American and British law enforcement agencies. The British are willing to wait and watch. In fact, the arrests were held off. They were held off. And the explanation as to why they're held off is not forthcoming here, except that we understand clearly that the timing has to do with the timing of the supposed disclosure of plots that they've known about, that they've instigated, that they've controlled, that they've monitored for months and even years, has to do with the political events that require them. It is, in fact, the disappearance of support for Blair in Great Britain, the crisis that he faced within his own cabinet, the prospect that he would be removed as prime minister, the fact that the Zionist Israeli operation in Lebanon met with a resounding defeat, as Hezbollah was able to resist this massive annihilation as we've described it in Lebanon, the fact that the Cheney bunch was reacting to the lowest point of support in the history of the administration in the United States, and reacting indeed with the defeat of their Democratic protege Lieberman by Ned Lamont in Connecticut, prompting Cheney and Rove to maintain that the people who opposed Lieberman and supported Lamont were in fact instruments of al-Qaeda and advancing terror. This has to do with the timing, as we will disclose later, of this so-called plot disclosure, something that they had under close control for over a year by their own admission.
Ralph, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer published a report of Paul Haven, an Associated Press writer, on Thursday, August 10th, immediately after the arrests, entitled, Plot May Have Been 9/11 Sequel. Counterterrorism officials, Haven writes, said Thursday that the plot thwarted in London appears to bear the fingerprints of al-Qaeda, and may even have been the, quote, big one they have been dreading since September 11, 2001, particularly as the five-year anniversary of the attacks on the United States approaches. Quote, in terms of scale, it was probably designed to be a new September 11th, said Jean-Charles Brizard, a French private investigator who works with lawyers of many September 11th victims. Quote, it involved the same tools, the same transportation tools and devices. And then Rohan Guntaratna, an an expert at Singapore's Institute of Defense and Strategic Studies, said, quote, it's a classic al-Qaeda tactic. It's a hallmark of al-Qaeda to carry out coordinated simultaneous attacks, and the aviation domain is certainly known to al-Qaeda. And then FBI Director Robert Mueller echoed those sentiments, saying, quote, this had the earmarks of an al-Qaeda plot. It was sophisticated, it had a lot of members, and it was international in scope. International in scope, al-Qaeda, there is absolutely no evidence of any al-Qaeda link, of any link with any organized group, nor has British intelligence produced any evidence that there was a plot. In fact, this so-called plot to bomb airlines, they had no airline tickets.
Maya, there has been a very particular feature of these disclosures and these accusations about, and this orchestra drumbeat of accusation in the British press about these young men. The word alleged is never used. They have not been charged. They have not been subjected to the slightest presentation of evidence. There's no evidence that has appeared, not a fact that can be established with respect to these young men in regard to any plot. Nothing except the accusation without evidence has appeared. And yet the Bank of England has seized their bank accounts. And yet the young men are held incommunicado. Not only incommunicado, but in icy cold conditions, subjected to sleeplessness and to physical abuse, no contact with families. The youngest of them is 14 years of age.
17.
No, there's a 14-year-old, Maya. It's been disclosed. One of the youngsters is actually 14 years of age, and they are not allowed to see their families. Their families are not allowed to contact them. All of the family members, whether the people lived with the families or not, that is to say there are some who are 35 years of age here, have been forced to leave their homes, and they have been sent off to hotels or to relatives while their homes have been confiscated and their possessions taken and the homes gone over by the authorities. These are family members and relatives of the accused. No due process. The Home Secretary describing them as terrorist plotters. No alleged, no evidence. This is the totalitarian state. And here is the New York Times, and it is the same pattern with respect to Miami and Toronto. August 14th, New York Times, to their neighbors and families, plot suspects led ordinary lives. Then it describes the 2 weeks ago, Shazah Haram Ali seemed despondent. The usually cheerful Mr. Ali might have encountered financial troubles in his used car business, a small venture. He had been running out of his home, and then he decided to go into, quote, pharmaceuticals, to branch out into something new because of financial problems. And the neighbors are incredulous that these very ordinary people who live normal lives, as it were, are suddenly accused of something of which there was no evidence whatsoever. Mr. Ali, one of two dozen suspects, to the shock of their neighbors and relatives, is charged with a plot to blow up a transatlantic or airliners with liquid explosives. And indeed, in interviews, friends and acquaintances of the detainees said the suspects were staunch Muslims who cherished spirituality, peace, and their families. Neighbors and friends voiced incredulity that they could be have taken part in any such scheme. Four or five of the suspects from the city of mostly red brick bungalows and two-story townhouses in verdant rolling hills west of London gathered once a week to box at a local community center. They played cricket and soccer together at Sands, a small park. Quote, they were sporting people, young, healthy chums. They liked to box or kick a football around and sweat. It is a universal description by people who knew them from the time they were babies. They prayed together at the Muslim Education Center. A prominent imam in High Wycombe said that one of the suspects, Don Stewart White, whose age has been given as 19, converted to Islam, was married a month ago to a Muslim woman. and had no interest in anything except his local affairs. It is the universal characteristic of the targeting of young people who are set up for charges without basis.
This is Taking Aim
with Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We continue with our program. The British suspect, Ralph, who you mentioned, Don Stewart White, who was a convert, happens also to be the son of a deceased Tory politician. And among the others, aside from him, Amin Tarek, 23, from Walthamstow in London, was a security guard at Heathrow Airport. And Ibrahim Savant was another convert. He was born Oliver Savant. My cousin, who went with Ibrahim to the same class, someone reported, said he converted because one day he went to a priest and asked him some questions. And then the priest didn't give him answers, so the friend, some of his friends told him to go to the mosque and speak to the imam. He liked the way the imam answered the questions. He was 18 years old at the time, and he converted. Mr. Savant's pregnant wife was also taken from their house in handcuffs, although she is not one of the 19 whose names were disclosed to the press, whose assets were seized by the Bank of England, but she was also taken away in handcuffs, and the police have not released the name of the one person that they did release who possibly could have been his wife. So as Ralph was saying, the profile that based upon the newspaper journalists talking to the people in the neighborhood, the profile of the people arrested does not fit anything resembling people who are dissatisfied with life, who have any anger, who have evidenced any anger, or who have any reason to be blowing up airplanes.
Well, Maya, the Scotsman article on the 13th of August, Sunday, is very clear about this. With respect to one of the accused, the as you were describing the claims about Rashid Rauf, who is supposedly an Uzbek Uzbekistani militant, or at least connected to these are all under the control of the Pakistani Special Services Group, the SSG of the ISI, which is an intelligence operation. And what's interesting about this in particular is that 1,500 people, no less, 1,500 people were working on this surveillance for MI5. MI5 was so involved with this that they had literally 1,500 people assigned to this, and for over a year, 1,500 intelligence operatives involved in tracking a few youngsters, a supposed bomb plot that they have been tracking and monitoring and documenting for over a year, and they sit on it. They don't do a damn thing about it. It is so transparent as to what we're dealing with here. The contrivance is that of a government operation, long in planning, with specific assigned MI6 and MI5 operatives to run the thing, and then targeting youngsters who are not related to it to create a fake plot.
Ralph, a report in the BBC, Dominic Casciani, Terror Fears in Walthamstow, goes on to talk about some of the alleged plotters. Waheed Zaman, one of those arrested. They talked to Hanif, who's Waheed's best friend. And Hanif said if he had been radicalized, if he had got involved in some kind of extremism, he would have tried to take me with him, surely. And that's why Hanif said, who's his best friend, that this cannot be so. Zaman is a student at London Metropolitan University. And he and Hanif played football and cricket. And Waheed, he said, was always a sociable, integrated guy with friends from the Asian, white, and black communities. Now, let's look again at London Metropolitan University, because the Sunday Telegraph said that an investigation of portable buildings used by the Islamic Society at London Metropolitan University turned up, quote, documents advocating jihad and a pamphlet on how to deal with approaches from the security services, end quote. One of the people arrested last week was a former head of the society. They don't give the name, possibly that's Wahid Zaman, or possibly it is another member. So what we have here is that the British intelligence services, the police, are going after young Muslims. They're going into the university. They're looking at the micro-investigating every little document that appears within the clubs of the Muslim societies. So we have Home Secretary John Reid, the highest police person within Great Britain, who's the one who has orchestrated the entire public presence and the reports to the press. And we have Reid coming out and saying, when he put all the airports in Great Britain under restrictions, quote, a plot to blow up planes in flight from the UK to the US and commit, quote, mass murder on an unimaginable scale has been disrupted. A mass murder on an unimaginable scale.
As if they're talking about a nuclear bomb or perhaps the saturation bombing of Lebanon with the annihilation of its entire infrastructure. Their presumptive plot entails the downing of a number of airlines, which would hardly be mass murder on an unprecedented scale. But here is a report from London called London Fog, Doubts Hangover Terror Plot by Christopher Reid. And it says, just weeks ago, a task force of British police, armed and others in chemical protection uniforms, raided an East London working home and arrested two brothers and shot one, supposedly part of an alleged terrorist plot to use a deadly substance, ricin, on an unsuspected citizenry. There was no terrorist plot, there was no ricin, there was no crime, except for the shooting of an innocent man. We have, therefore, brothers and sisters, a number of dry runs of this so-called terror plot. Now, we are told, the article continues, that the British police had been tracking this plot for a year, but decided to pounce on the alleged perpetrators last Wednesday because of information from a, quote, source in Pakistan, unquote. Well, the source in Pakistan is none other than a British intelligence operative with the ISI. Isn't that interesting? And it is odd that none of these people had obtained airline tickets. Hey, they were going to go on an airline, but they didn't have any tickets. Or they're going to walk on and say they'll buy their tickets on the flight. It is the crudity of this operation is almost on a par with the events of 9/11 themselves. The latest terror plot, this article continues, is exaggerated news, intentionally exaggerated news. And it is obvious that UK, quote, UK government spokespeople who claim they have unveiled terror cells deploy this policy to frighten people. Every time, quote, I'm quoting Blair, is faced with a political campaign against his policies, the attempt is made to shift world attention from these policies. And indeed, there, it's interesting if you look at the responses and the quotations from the press in the Arab world, including the mainstream press there. Here is Al-Quds of Al-Arabi from the Arabic. And it states, if this were a real terrorist plot, as claimed by UK police, it is obvious that they would have to produce evidence to sustain it. If the UK police have been following this plot for months, as was announced, why have they waited all this time to announce it until just the moment when the majority of British public opinion stands against Blair Bush's support of the Israeli aggression against Lebanon? We doubt the UK police claims because we know very well that faking these plots is a constant practice by the USA and UK governments, who also faked the plot that Iraq had arms of mass destruction. And then the press in the Arab world continues that the Blair-Bush duo has been on a vacation during the alleged plot disclosure. It is Blair's stand-in, Minister for Home Affairs John Reid, who spoke in London in a manner that we find familiar. Police claim they have caught main players in a plot, and they no longer use the word alleged, which would jeopardize any trial by prejudging the evidence in Great Britain. And then the newspaper comments, they suddenly change midweek schedule to deliver an extraordinary announcement. Instead of an address about immigration and the justice system, Reid switches his speech to, quote, protecting the public from Islamic fascists because of their access to modern chemical, biological, and other means of mass destruction.
Ralph, let's look at what the means of mass destruction was going to be. And that is taking an explosive that's in a liquid, disguised as an everyday liquid, in that could be carried in a Gatorade bottle, and then having a fuse and having it detonate with either an electronic device in a cell phone or an MP3 player. This is reminiscent, according to the L.A. Times and other press, an article that appeared in the L.A. Times on August 11th, the 10-year-old terrorist plot by Susan Trento and Joseph Trento, describes how in 1995 the U.S. took into custody two Kuwaiti men who had devised the technical plan for Operation Bojinka, the name for a plan to blow up a large number of jumbo jets over the Pacific. In a test, the perpetrators in 1994 blew up an unsuspecting Japanese businessman in his seat on a Philippine domestic flight by wiring a device using a watch and liquid explosive disguised in a contact lens case. And this was supposedly proved that the terrorists, so-called terrorists, could get the explosive aboard undetected. The article continues, thanks to Philippine intelligence, the U.S. eventually arrested two people. That's Abdul Hakim Murad and Ramzi Ahmed Youssef. The two told the CIA about Osama bin Laden's plans to knock down big buildings using planes and to blow up airliners using small chemical bombs. And that was in 1995. And Youssef was convicted in the United States for the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, which Ralph disclosed the real truth of in his important article. On Thursday, when the British arrested 24 people, including the one airport employee I mentioned before, nine of those were allegedly set to board flights carrying mini-bombs disguised as everyday liquids. And the liquids were to be mixed on board and turned into bombs. Authorities said that the terrorist cell is believed to be as many as 50 people. But let's look at this supposed explosive device. According to British intelligence, and ABC reported this on August 10th, that the plotters planned to leave the top of the bottle sealed and filled with the original beverage, but add a false bottom, filled with liquid or gel explosive. The terrorists planned to dye the explosive mixture red to match the sports drink sealed in the top half of the container. They thought this would ensure that they would be able to pass through security, and even if they were asked to unseal and drink the beverage, they'd be able to do so because there'd be a false bottom and the explosive would be in the bottom. What is this explosive? Supposedly, it's TATP, which is tricetone triperoxide, which is similar to hydrogen peroxide, but much stronger. It's an acetone. The hydrogen peroxide that we're used to is 3% medicinal peroxide. That's not concentrated enough to cause an explosion. But with TATP, it's appeared supposedly in the Middle East, and supposedly this is the explosive that the shoe bomber Richard Reid had within his shoe. It's not considered a thermochemically highly favored event because it decomposes very easily. It can be prepared in a basement lab using commercially available starting materials obtained from hardware stores, pharmacies, and stores selling cosmetics. And the reason it's not a preferred explosive is that it's fairly easy to explode. In other words, it's easy to blow yourself up when you make it, and certainly it's easy to blow yourself up in the process of getting on an airplane. Ralph?
Maya, you see, with every aspect of this, I mean, as you mentioned, they've recycled the Bojinka Philippine plot, supposedly involving liquids that would be detonated, which in fact had not the capacity to remotely affect an airline. And what's interesting also about that is that Ramzi Youssef, who the Central Intelligence Agency tortured and presented as the author of the events of 1993, was the subject of an article in the New York Times at the time about how he was the key figure with running Mohammed Atta in relation to 9/11. And what was the evidence for this? That he was the linchpin figure, according to the CIA, based on the Bojinka plot arrests for the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. In a nutshell, the World Trade Center bombing in 1993 was an entire sting operation of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They planned it. They provided the explosives for it. They sent in their operative to recruit young men to meetings who wore a wire and recorded all their discussions. They were all in the files of the the FBI office in New York. And here we have, again, the revisiting of these fairy tales. And the most interesting fact about the charge is that liquid explosives in large and noticeable amounts do not have any possibility of blowing up an airplane in midair. And the lip gloss of women as a source of this is utter insanity. It bears no relation to any physical or chemical reality. And the detonating devices, in order to get such detonating devices that could affect liquids in this small quantity, which wouldn't work anyway, you'd have to get the detonating devices onto the airplane. How do you disguise those? Detonating devices with all of their chemical, highly detectable. You couldn't carry them on any airplane without detection. This is a concoction from beginning to end, and it correlates with the prior false flag operations that we have discussed. There is a great deal more to be said about the absence of evidence, the fabrication of evidence, the long-standing operation of the authorities in running these events for over a year prior. But one facet of it that is essential for us to look at here, and if we don't finish with the time we have allotted to us, we'll continue it next week, is the utilization of these events for the police state preparations in both the United States and Great Britain. The Scotsman on Sunday 13th, Blair to force through 90-day detention. Tony Blair is planning to push through 90-day detention without charge for terror suspects. Following the alleged plot to murder thousands of airline passengers by Boeing senior jets out of the plane. So how are they deploying this? A senior government source confirmed that Tony Blair, Chancellor Gordon Brown, supposedly his opponent, but in fact embracing this entire scenario, Chancellor Gordon Brown and Home Secretary John Reid have stated that the UK's narrow escape from a major disaster has proved the case for a clampdown on the enemy within. What does that mean? You know, in the United States, you have a Bill of Rights, supposedly. You're not entitled to hold people without charge. You're not entitled to hold people indefinitely without contact with attorneys, without any presentiment of evidence. Now in the United States, you can hold people for 48 hours. In Britain, they managed to extend that to 28 days, and now they want to make it 90 days.
Ralph, David Winnick, a veteran Labour MP, who actually is the one who considered it a compromise and put it forward, that is the 28-day detention, because originally the Blair government had proposed the 90 days and the compromise was 28 days. He told Scotland on Sunday that it was only a few years ago that police had 2 or 3 days to release or charge suspects, and that figure has been increased repeatedly by Parliament with little opposition. Quote, "The danger is that by increasing it steadily, you get up to 90 days, and then people will start saying 90 days isn't enough."
Well, Kurt Nimmo, in his inimitable fashion, called this liquid bombing the Constitution. Here is Michael Chertoff, the head of the Minister of Homeland Security, who says we have to make sure our legal system allows us to operate. It's not like the 20th century where you had time to get warrants. And Chertoff has now declared, along with Bush, that in the wake of the plot, as the New York Times describes it today, the Justice Department will study Britain's terror laws. And Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez has ordered a total review of American counterterrorism laws as a first step forward to determining whether changes in American law are required. What are those changes? They're going to eliminate the due process. They're going to eliminate the entitlement to a civilian court. They're going to eliminate the entitlement to being charged without being tried. And they're going to eliminate the prohibition upon disappearances and detention for unlimited periods without contact with lawyers or with families. The 90 days, the 3 month disappearance, effective disappearance for anybody who the government chooses to suspect in place now in Great Britain is something that both Chertoff and Gonzalez have declared they intend to impose on the United States.
That's right, Ralph, what Chertoff said. Quote, what helped the British in this case is the ability to be nimble, to be fast, to be flexible, to operate based on fast moving information. We have to make sure our legal system allows us to do that. It's not like the 20th century where you had time to get warrants. And that's actually reinforced by President Bush in his weekly radio address. He said the UK terror plot was, quote, a reminder that terrorists are still plotting attacks to kill our people. And also he added, it's further evidence that the terrorists we face are sophisticated and constantly changing their tactics.
Maya, ABC News reported that air marshals have exposed that, quote, innocent people are placed on watch lists to meet a quota. The air marshals say they must file one surveillance detention report, or SDR, per month. You could be on a secret government database or watch list for simply taking a picture on an airplane or speaking to somebody in a manner that an air marshal doesn't like. The air marshals, whose identities are being concealed, told ABC News that they are required to submit at least one report a month, and if they don't, there's no raise, no bonus, no awards, and no special assignments. Quote, innocent passengers are entered on international intelligence databases as suspicious persons acting in a suspicious manner on an aircraft, and they did nothing wrong, said one federal air marshal. These unknowing passengers doing nothing wrong are landing in a secret government document called the Surveillance Detection Report, air marshals told ABC News. Managers in Las Vegas have continued to maintain this dangerous quota system. Do these reports have real-life impacts on the people identified as potential terrorists? Absolutely, the federal air marshal replied. An internal Homeland Security document defines an SDR as a report designed to identify terrorists. When you see decisions like this for these reports, who loses here, Kowaleski asked. This is the ABC article still. The people we're supposed to protect, the American public. In short, what we're dealing with here is the total surveillance state, the fascist state, the police state, for which the terror plots are but the little preparation. Chertoff, we have to review all terror laws in the United States. Gonzalez, we have to eliminate impediments to the imposition of detention without charge. We are in the presence of an escalation of police state America on the back of these fake terror plots. We shall continue with the ongoing expose of police state America and the false flag operations that prepare for it.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program, the UK-US airline terror charade, turning the screws on democratic rights, will be on our website archive, www.takingaim.info. You can contact us, and we hope you do, at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. And we recorded this program on Tuesday, August 15th, 2006. If you live in the Bay Area, we hope to see you at our event on Thursday, August 17th, 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. That's at Cedar and Bonita in Berkeley. I'm